Hi, folks. Welcome back to another one of these current events political chats that Dan and I have decided to start having, because there's a lot that's going on in British politics at the moment, but it's going on under the surface. And so I don't think as much attention to it is being called upon as is warranted, because a lot of things have happened, but they're small things, but they are indicative of trends that are, I think, at some point going to kind of erupt out of the political environment. And so I want to talk about them. So let's talk about some of the council by-election results that have come in recently. As you can see here, this is in Exmouth Holsden in East Devon, where the Labour vote just completely collapsed.
So when you say things are under the surface, are you talking about the Tories and Labour's prospect of ever forming a government again?
Well, yeah, actually. I actually do think we might be looking at the last Labour government. And I was tweeting about this the other day, because it seems that the coalition that made up the Labour Party is just completely fractured at this point. Mm. The Labour right, as they call it, made up of managerial Blairite types, were able to corral the working class and the radical student politics types into the same coalition. But that seems to have just completely been obliterated.
Well, that's an interesting question. Who are the extant Labour managerialist Blairites? I mean, I can think of Andy Burnham, but after that, I kind of come up short. And he's not actually even in the Parliamentary Labour Party at this point.
Well, we'll talk about the Parliamentary Labour Party in a minute, but the question really is, who is their constituency? And the answer is civil servants and NHS workers.
Well, and immigrants.
Exactly. It's not even the immigrants, right? And it seems that basically Labour were trying to pull in too many various parties into the coalition that were too contradictory. So it's one thing having the working class base and then the sort of student politics and the managerial elites all in the same party. That's quite a rough coalition. Mm. And you can see how the liberal managerial elites are in direct opposition to the working class base, who are themselves deeply parochial, whereas the elites are international and, frankly, oikophobic. And then having the radical woke sort of student politics crammed in on that, well, you're going to have to make a choice. Do you want the radical woke stuff that wants infinite open borders and immigrants, or do you want the working class base? And the liberal elite chose the ones that they felt most comfortable with, which are the radical students. And in addition to that, they thought, okay, we're also going to be the party of Islam and immigrants, which I think really sealed the deal for the working class base. And it turns out the working class base was millions of votes.
Yeah.
Turns out that was huge.
I mean, to be fair, they did win the last election, but I mean, how did they do that? They did it then by having the immigrant vote.
Well, they did it by luck, because Reform came in and smacked the Tories.
Well, I mean, they still did get enough votes to form a government. And that would have been the immigrant vote, which, as I'm sure we're going to talk about, is peeling away from them because they've got a more pure form alternative. It was the old left, because, I mean, there was a certain age of which people just never changed their vote.
Yeah.
Old lefties. But then there's also the sort of student lefties as well. But, I mean, they're a fairly unstable coalition. I mean, one, because they're Zoomers and they don't care about the shibboleths of the past.
There are a lot of millennials in that as well.
Yeah, a fair number, but they're in the process of growing up as well.
They are.
But also, these people tend to, at some point, these university leftists, they want to grow up and they want to get a job. Mm-hmm. And eventually they start looking at their pay packet, they start looking at their children, and they're thinking, what's my future here? What are my kids' future?
You know what? I actually think that a lot of them are actually going more left-wing.
Really?
Because, I have experience of this in people I know personally who are dyed-in-the-wool leftists, always voted Labour, but now going over to the Greens just because Labour are too right-wing.
Right.
Labour have admitted that they're committed to reality, right? The dream is off the table for Labour.
Yes.
And so they're like, oh, well, I'll go to the other party that sells me the dream then. And that's why the Greens are doing it.
Well, I guess they're peeling away in both directions then. Because, I mean, I was thinking of somebody like Aaron Bastani, who's maybe our age, maybe a little bit younger. But, I mean, he's an example of somebody who's on the left, very committed, built a brand as being on the left, but started paying taxes and having children and looking around and thinking, what the hell is this is giving to them? So you get that natural peel away as people start to experience life. They start to leave the left. But you're talking about the true believers.
I'm talking about the sort of Ash Sarkar types,
right,
who otherwise would have been committed to the Labour Party, but have decided the Labour Party far too right-wing and is now peeling off to the Greens. Right, so it's the Labour coalition is just completely collapsing everywhere, and these by-election results are a great example where Reform have just eaten the entire Labour vote in East Devon there, The Conservatives are, like you say, the people who'd never change their vote. Well, that's 25% boomers. And the Lib Dems being Middle England, who are struggling a little bit there. You'll notice that they've lost a bit too. They're losing ground because reality is slowly but surely catching up even to East Devon. Mm. One of the most homogenous parts of the country and a true sort of English Arcadia still.
I mean, at first blush, I'm kind of confused that the Conservatives are holding up as well. But then I suppose this is against the last election, which was an absolutely crippling year for the Conservatives.
Yeah, but also Devon is still... Yes. An idyll, you know, where nothing ever happens.
It's the Shire. Yeah.
It is genuinely. It's like it's going to be the last Shire as well, probably, because it's so far to the west. But then you have Middlesbrough, which is another interesting result, in which Reform gained from the Lib Dems, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
So obviously the majority.
I mean, for non-US viewers, this is more northern. This is more working class, much more so than the last one.
It is, but it was still a Lib Dem council seat. And as you can see, Reform have eaten the Conservative and Labour votes, but also a bit into the Lib Dem vote, because like I said, like we talked about in the last episode of this, the Lib Dems and Reform are actually the same constituency, just differentiated on the size of their gardens.
Yes,
they're both Englishmen, they're both English voters. It's just how prosperous are they, and the fact that the Lib Dems are going down indicates their prosperity is going down also. So this is another interesting move. And then in Labour heartland, such as Liverpool, well, the Greens are chewing them up.
Very northern, very working class. I mean, this is...
Liverpool's kind of its own thing. I wouldn't even call it northern. You know, it's like Liverpool's got its own personal identity. But it's always been just Labour stronghold for decades.
Grievance culture. Funny accents, all that sort of thing.
Yeah. We're not English, we're Scouse.
Yeah.
But even there, Reform are on 18%. And the Conservatives dying out. Lib Dems, no hold, because they're not really an English city. And the Labour Party getting absolutely crushed by the Greens.
So the Greens are interesting to me because, I don't know, you're lumping Reform and the Lib Dems in together because they're the same type of person to look at.
Yeah.
Grant you that. But ideologically, I'd say the Greens and the Liberal Democrats are probably closer because both of them are parties which are basically just fundamentally unreality.
So, not really, right? So, the Liberal Democrats, for them, they believe in the... how to describe it? The radical traditionalism of England, right? They assume all of that in the same way that the Reform voters want all of that. But the Greens hate all of that, right? So the Greens would, if Ed Davey and a Green were sat there and the argument was, should there be loud noises on the train? The Green would say, sure, it's part of their culture. It's what immigrants are like. Ed Davey would put on his swastika and start goose-stepping around the stage, right?
I think that's an interesting way of framing it. The Lib Dems just assume everything that Reform want. And that strikes true because I live in an area which is very, very Lib Dem.
Yep.
And, you know, these people are living in this sort of fantasy land that perhaps once existed, but they assume it's 1950s and they haven't mentally progressed on from that. So that's what I mean by they're living in unreality, which strikes me for the Greens as well. But, yeah, there's some interesting parallels there.
And so for the Liberal Democrats, they can adopt a kind of progressive liberal worldview that isn't insane and radical. It is dinner party peacocking politics. But for the Greens, they truly believe in this radical agenda.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, as we talked about last time, you know, back in the early 90s, when you saw an immigrant, they were generally quite high value. They're your local GP or something like that. There was very few of them, and if your neuroplasticity died, it's somewhere in the 1990s, and you've been unable to absorb any further information.
Yes,
I can understand why you might feel. That immigrants are just necessarily a good thing because they fit into the community and they add value and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, that's a Lib Dem for me. That makes sense.
You're thinking of Mr. Omar, who runs the corner shop, or the local Indian, and he's an absolute dream. He's completely polite. His family are all polite. His children are well-adjusted, and they fit into the local school because they're the only Indian family or Pakistani family or whatever in the village. And you don't think any further about it. And that's fine. That's fine. And I'm glad that you're happy and he's happy and he fits in and everyone's good. But that's just not the story elsewhere. Mm. And the Greens represent that radical fringe of the student left and the immigrant coalition, which we have seen already breaking down in your party. So it's interesting how the Greens are basically just an insurgent force to destroy the Labour Party, destroy the Labour Party coalition. They can't last on their own. Like, how many Muslims are really going to be happy to be led by Zach Polanski in the long run? And this is already, we'll get to your party in a bit, actually. They polled at 1% in a national poll the other day, which I thought was...
The other thing I'll say about these numbers is, thinking back to when we did our election coverage, one of the striking things about that was, yes, Labour won, and they won, you know, their large majority, their super majority, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But the striking thing for me was just how thin all of those majorities were.
Completely.
And it used to be the case. When I first got involved in politics in the 1990s, if you had less than maybe 20,000, maybe even 25,000 votes, you were considered a marginal.
Yes.
Whereas these days, you can't apply that standard because nobody has a majority greater than about 4,000. You're considered to have a safe seat if you've got 4,000.
I mean, there are Labour politicians currently sitting who have literally hundreds in votes above their opponent.
Well, famously, was it Jess Phillips who had to...
400 or 600, something like that.
Yeah, and she had to don the headscarf, she had to wear the long skirt and go to the Muslim community and basically beg them to continue supporting her.
Exactly. And so this is another... Again, remarkable that the insurgent parties are doing so well, frankly. And so this is an aggregate of the local by-elections since the 2025 election. And one thing that we notice is actually... that for all the sound and fury, the Green Party is not doing that well.
Interesting.
You would think that the Green Party would have had dozens and dozens of these. They've only gained two.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I mean, it is a feature of our political system that you can be making strong gains and it doesn't actually show up in the results for quite a long time. So Farage had this for a long time with UKIP and then, well, whatever it was, the Brexit Party and now Reform.
4 million votes, one seat.
Yeah, considerable increases in vote share, considerable increases in votes, but there's like a tipping point and then you just break through.
Yeah. And that's what's happened with Reform here, as you can see. But again, what are we seeing here? The Reform Party has gained over 50 seats. The Liberal Democrats have gained 20 seats. Labour and Conservatives, of course, lost considerably. Huge numbers, in fact, you know. Literally, like, they're down to a sort of quarter of their seats. There have been a few independents, but not that many. This goes back to my thoughts on the map, which we'll come to in a minute, which is this is the consolidation of English thought. It is the English consolidating into their classes, the Liberal Democrats being the affluent middle class, Reform being the angry working class, and then picking their champions to lead them into the future, into the uncertain future of foreign coalitions, or the previous Blairite paradigm.
I'll give Ed Dutton credit for this, because again, going back to the last election stream, one of the first things he said when he saw the results was this represents the, the ethnolisation or whatever it was of English politics.
Yes.
The moment that you've got, because that was the moment when we got openly Islamic members of parliament
go
in. And he said, the moment that happens, you have to become a sectarian society. You have to become Northern Ireland.
Yes. And I think that's what these things represent. The Liberal Democrats representing the upper class or well-to-do middle class, and like I said, Reform representing the angry working class. So I think that is what is happening, a subconscious ethnic alignment in politics.
Very interesting.
Which I think the mainstream is blind to because they always speak in terms of policy and ideology.
And again, this holds up perfectly with what I see in my area. Lots of Lib Dems, but they're all older. Every Lib Dem activist I see is...
older Gen X.
At least 75.
Oh, really? That old?
Yeah.
Blimey.
They're very old.
All of the Lib Dems I see around, and I do see quite a lot, because I live on the outskirts of Swindon.
Yes.
And so there are a lot of... I'm not actually in the Swindon constituency. I'm right on the border. And so I get Lib Dem leaflets all the time. And every Lib Dem activist or councillor is someone about my age, frankly. Or a little
bit older. They're quite young where you are then.
Well, Gen X.
Yeah.
You know, they're people who have lived in the Shires their whole lives. Mm. And they're like, yeah, but I know what the true liberal values are. And, you know,
But conversely, every time I speak to a young person, they're all about reform.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. This is the devastating poll that was released the other day. And I mean, you've got to enjoy it, really. You've just got to take it in for a moment. So for anyone who's just listening, Reformer on 31%, which has been a pretty damn consistent rough share of the poll. But what's really interesting is that actually does align quite well with the percentage of the country which is working class English. About 30% of the country is working class English. Conservatives, 20%, well, that roughly represents the boomers, actually, because they are about a fifth of the population and they just don't change their votes. But the interesting thing is how the Green Party is on 18% and the Labour Party is on 14%. Now, I mean, I don't ever recall seeing a poll with the Labour Party on 14% before.
Not in my lifetime that I can think of.
In fact, probably not since they were founded, frankly.
Yeah, it's not since 1924.
Yeah, it's like it's really, really difficult to imagine. And what I love about this is the dying days of the managerial regime that stole the Labour Party from the working class. Because they, again, we've talked about the natural constituency of the Labour Party has just moved to Reform. They've just like, okay, I don't like this. And so now, and the student politicians are moving to the Green Party, and the immigrants are moving to the Green Party. And so the Labour Party literally just represents the international managerial order. And that's the percentage of the population that's basically committed to that. Thing is, I'm expecting that to go lower.
Yeah, well, yes. And I mean, it's bringing back for me, back in the Tony Blair years, Labour used to be having this debate all the time. You have the old-fashioned lefties and the new Blairite-era managerialists.
Yeah.
And the old-fashioned lefties would be raging at them, saying... you know, you're taking over my party, you're turning it into a managerialist party. And the attitude
and they were
was,
right.
Yeah, well, they were right, yeah. And I also remember going to, because I was working in the city back then, I would go along to the annual May Day protest, because I used to find that quite interesting. And I would always try and find, because you'd have these sort of sad, lonely, old left-wingers.
For anyone who's not aware, May Day is basically some communist holiday where they say, celebrate unions and, you know, communism. So it's very parochial to the Labour left.
They would go into the city and they would make a lot of noise and fury and protest against capitalism. And my boss would hang out the window and flick £50 notes at them to watch them scrabble around for to get the money. But anyway, I would always go out and find the sad old lonely old leftist.
Yeah.
And have a word with him. And this was in the Blair years. Mm. And universally, I mean, they turned up because they've been doing it their whole life, turning up to the May Day protest.
It's literally a tradition.
Absolutely. And I would say, how do you feel about Blair? How do you feel about the Labour government? And they were just despondent.
They hate him.
Yeah.
Because they knew these guys were in the ascendancy. They were clever. They had an ideology that they could use to advance themselves through the Labour Party. And the old left types, well, they were yesterday's men.
Mm.
Like the Soviet Union had collapsed.
That they were taken for granted in the same way that the Tories, and perhaps not so far down the line, Reform will start doing, is they take their core audience for granted.
Correct. And the Lib Dems, of course, are consistent in almost every poll because about 11% of the country are well-to-do middle-class people.
Who don't think.
And they're focused in the Southwest. So that's just, I mean, that is a devastating poll.
I mean, this is the poll and this is the numbers, but as we were alluding to just a moment ago, there are certain tipping points with these numbers in our system that have a devastating outcome on the seat. So I'm wondering if you...
I do happen to have this mapped out.
You do?
Yeah, I do. This is a seat estimate of Labour down to four seats. Four seats. I mean, what do you make of that?
I mean, I've been watching politics for a long time, but I have never seen anything like this. Labour, four seats down, 407 seats.
Just to be clear, in the history of the Labour Party, the worst result they ever got was in the 1931 election at 52 seats.
Right, so shortly after they reformed.
Yeah.
They got above where the Liberal Democrats usually are and then stayed there and have been consistently either the party of government or opposition.
Yeah. I mean, in the first national election, they got two seats, but ignoring that, since 1945, since they've been like a proper modern party.
This is absolutely astonishing. I mean, you've got to hand it to the Conservatives. They made themselves absolutely hated by their own base. They're widely regarded as traitors. But it did take them years to do that.
Yeah.
And
some serious betrayal as well.
Yeah.
Like, the Labour Party hasn't really done anything. Like, I mean, obviously, it has, but, like, With the Conservatives, you've got the Boris wave, which is a very clear and unquestionable betrayal. But the Labour Party have always been able to frame everything they're doing in terms of benefit for the country. And the Conservatives just were not able to do that with the Boris wave.
Well, I think Labour have done something. They've very clearly signalled that they're against the country. They're against the people of the country.
Yeah.
Unless they're the new Britons.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And even then, those people don't believe the Labour Party. No. Because you've got like Shabana Mahmood going, yeah, I'm just going to start deporting people.
It's entirely insincere.
Exactly. The Labour Party are committed to these structures. So the Labour Party are the party of the system.
Yeah.
And everyone knows that they're the party of the system.
Mm.
And everyone hates the system. And so the Labour Party, I mean, I thought the Tory wipeout of the last election was bad, which it was.
Mm.
But 407 seats predicted to go down. And the thing is, Keir Starmer is acting like he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Like, the Labour Party are acting like a party that is blind to this.
I mean, their speed running of abandonment of
any constituency.
I mean, it is genuinely impressive. I mean, if you put you or I in charge of the Labour Party and told us to destroy it as comprehensively and quickly as possibly, we wouldn't be able to get close to this.
I mean, I could turn this around, but it'd get really racist really quickly.
Well, no, I'm saying... I'm saying if we were deliberately trying to destroy the Labour Party, we couldn't have done anything like as well as this.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And this is a long time coming as well, because you could feel in the early 2000s, I'm sure you felt it, the discontent that the working class had with the Labour Party, right? Like Tony Blair, he won his first election quite handily, but he barely scraped through on the second election. And he had his own line for it. It's like, well, people are happy and so they don't turn out for the election. It's like, no, that means people aren't actually that happy. And you just kind of scrape that through. You didn't increase your share.
The difference between then and now is that you didn't encounter the opposite view because the media class, the BBC, the press,
they had it sewn up.
They were all in love with Labour.
Yep.
They all endorsed Labour, even the BBC.
Even the Conservative Party.
Party endorsed Labour.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And so you had this sense inside of you that something isn't right. But you couldn't find any voices. I mean, you didn't start until whatever it was, 2013, maybe something like that.
And even then, I wasn't talking about this.
Yeah, exactly. And so you just simply didn't encounter somebody articulating the opinion. So you thought that this is just, well, I didn't think it, but a lot of people just thought, oh, this is just a nagging doubt inside of me.
Yeah.
But it's just me.
Yeah. And 20 years on, complete collapse. And so, I mean, I genuinely don't see how Labour are going to come back from a result like this.
Well, you've already said, but they're not going to do that.
I don't think they are. Exactly. I don't think they can, right? I think the people who currently constitute Labour are the true believers in the NHS, you know, the people who would die for the NHS, would literally fight wars.
I mean,
they
literally will because it's an appalling service.
they literally will.
Yeah.
They'll be put to death by the NHS if the end of life bill passes. But the point is, I think this is basically the end of the Labour Party. I don't see why anyone would want to go back to it. Does it have that can attract its own constituency back? And there's not really anything there.
Well, I mean, let's say they do double this and they get 8 seats.
I mean, let's
concede that. Yeah. I mean, or even 10 times it, they get 40
that's
seats.
Still a devastating defeat. But the thing is, that's probably more likely. Right, it's probably more likely they'll get about 80 seats.
But I mean, who is going to be interested in them? They're just a spent force. There's no energy behind them. Yep. Nobody's enthusiastic about them.
Yeah.
I mean, as we heard from the last Labour conference, one of the MPs was overheard saying, "I hate going out on the doorstep. They just scream at us, tell us to F off, and slam the door in our face."
Yep. And it's been like that since the days of Corbyn.
Well. I think it's got a lot worse since basically Southport.
Corbyn was way more popular than Starmer.
Yeah. I mean, was it Corbyn lost the election by getting more votes than Labour won with this last time?
Correct. Corbyn got more votes than Starmer.
The only difference is that that Theresa May didn't have Reform splitting the vote.
Exactly. And Nigel Farage was basically standing down during that period of time.
One of the many times he likes to stand down in favour of the establishment.
And you know what? I can understand the argument that, look, we need to get Brexit done. So Nigel Farage does step down and then for Boris's big win. But of course, the Conservatives betrayed him. In fact, Conservatives at 48, that's atrocious. again, if you think about 380 and Boris on 50% approval when he comes into office, the Conservatives, again, complete collapse, down 48 seats. That's atrocious. What are you doing? Like, your party is done. Not,
and the oldest political party in the world.
And it's on its way out.
Normally famed for its survival instinct.
Yes.
But because they've adopted the Blair mindset so completely,
yes,
they can't do what is obviously the right thing to do. I mean, for a start, don't in an era where immigration is the top issue, don't have a Nigerian first-generation immigrant as your leader. But I mean,
she's based, though.
Yeah, she is, because under the Tory selection process, only at a minimum women, but normally women plus ethnics, are allowed to be based in order to get through selection, because they only hire Lib Dems these days.
So I went to Parliament the other day to talk to a Tory grandee about what could be done about the Conservative Party. So he wanted some advice, because I guess he finds me an interesting person. And
did you tell him resignation, suicide, and maybe a written apology? But
I didn't. He was a really nice chap. I'm not going to name him, obviously.
Yes.
But we were talking about the current political environment, and I was just asking him, okay, look, how is it that, like, it's from the outside, it's difficult to perceive how power actually flows in the Conservative government. But this guy has been in government. He's been the Tory whip as well. And so if anyone should know, he should know. And he was like, look, basically all power is concentrated in the leader, and it's about momentum. If the party believes in aggregate that something ought to happen, then it tends to just happen, regardless of any of the sort of bureaucratic processes that are supposed to underpin it. Unlike in the Labour Party, where you have a very complex and rigid structure of, you know, committees and whatnot, you know, not quangos, like cabinets or chairs or whatever they call them, you know, that the students can infiltrate and begin.
They're voting blocks.
Yeah.
Unions being a big one. And
exactly, They've got a much more formalised structure in the Labour Party.
So he didn't talk about the 1922 committee at all?
No.
Interesting.
He didn't. Exactly. I thought he would. But he said, not really. Most of it is about momentum, right? So you have to be on the cusp of a sort of cultural wave in order to just capture the Conservative Party, which explains how Cameron and Blairism took over the Tories.
Well, but I mean,
they didn't infiltrate it. They just had cultural momentum, and the Tories were like, oh, okay, we'll follow what's cool.
I know lots of Tory MPs back then, and they all worshipped Blair.
Yeah.
And they all wanted to emulate his success. They all wanted to copy him.
And what's interesting is, The way he was describing the Conservative Party, it kind of like herding cats, frankly. As in, they're all a lot more independent than they look, right? And so, like, it's not like you have in the Labour Party, you have lots of joined up coalitions, like the unions, like the feminists, like the immigrants, like, and they've all essentially a little constituency to themselves. Well, the Conservatives are a lot more independent minded. And so they're a lot more sort of bourgeois and looking around, so what is everyone else doing, you know? And how can I become part of the in crowd and gain the cultural momentum to lead the wave, right? So this is just one chap's opinion, but he'd been in the Conservative Party for a long time.
I read a thread about how fish navigate as a shoal.
Yes,
and it's quite interesting. And basically the rule, it depends on the species of fish, but it's something of like course. They all keep 3 inches to the left of, and the same speed as
it's
the one on the left.
It's all relational to the other fish around them.
And there's one fish at the front that gets spooked by something and turns, and then the whole bloody shoal follows. And that it's essentially what you're describing here with the Conservative Party.
That's what he was describing. And I just came away from that very interested, because obviously I was there to talk about the relationship between the Conservative Party and Rupert Lowe, but we'll get onto that in a little bit. So anyway, getting back to this is a more granular map. So the estimate of Reform 352, that would be a majority, but a very, very slim one. But as you can see, London just going green, like everywhere that was Labour is just going green. They're just being completely eaten up. Bristol completely. Like, you know, any of the sort of city heartlands where they were previously, Labour, these all green.
I can't
bits.
See the four red seats.
I think 1, 2, 3.
Okay, well, they're very small though.
Yeah, I don't know where the fourth one is. might not be shown very well.
It'd be like, where's Wally trying to find the...
But everywhere green on this map was previously red.
Yeah.
And everywhere teal on this map was previously blue. And so, right, okay, or in the north, sorry, everywhere teal around here was previously red. So you can see the just complete collapse of the center. And what's interesting is this doesn't seem to have pierced the bubble in centrist politics. Now, in the conservative side, they are aware that they're on the downswing and there's no coming back.
Well, that's very astute of them then. Yeah. they're basically preternaturally their omniscience then, aren't they?
Compared to the Labour Party, they are, because Keir Starmer thinks he's the last chance for centrist politics.
I mean, he probably is the last of centrist politics.
Exactly. Yeah. He probably is. And the thing is, if Labour die with the term centrism attached to them...
Ooh. I like this.
It kills the centre in Britain. It kills the Blairite status quo going back to the 1990s.
Yes, I like this.
Right.
I guess the additional problem that Labour have that perhaps Tories dodge to an extent is that there is an understanding that the mechanisms of state at every level are Blairite.
Yes.
I mean, that was the great genius of Blair. He came in on day one and he took every bit of power that he could strip out of Parliament and handed it to a quango, and then made those quangos self-selecting to make sure that only Blairites ever held power forever. So at least the Tories could say, oh, you know, we got this problem with the judges, and we've got the problem with this, and we've got the problem with, you know, this committee and the human rights lawyers and stuff. Labour cannot disown any of it. They are completely of the system.
Exactly. And if we just go back to the big map a second. Now, what does that system look like ruling this country? This is a far-right country. That's what the map is telling us. That is a far-right country in almost every corner of it. In the southwest, apart from the Lib Dem areas, in the southeast, in East Anglia, in Wales, in the Midlands, in the north. England is a far-right country.
Mm.
And we are going to be saddled with a legacy Blairite system that hates the people. And the people, like I've said before, are just in revolt against the system, whether they realize it or not. But this is a fascinating article. I'm just going to read a couple of quotes from it. Asked whether he saw himself as the last chance for the centre, Sakir said yes. I think this is the real test of centrist politics. I don't mean Labour versus Tories. Of course not, because the Tories are also part of the centre. Yeah, because to some extent, that's what we've had. It's a different proposition. And we have to show that politics can deliver. We also have to expose the right for what it is, because the propositions of reform would tear our country apart.
It's fascinating that we got to this point, because
for
the last whatever it was, since the post-war era, there has been this pantomime put on that frames Labour over here and Conservatives over here. And they've always maintained that there were opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I've always maintained, and people looked at me like I was absolutely mental in my sort of teens and 20s when I was saying this, but they're the same thing, and the spectrum is actually much, much wider. At this point, he's not even bothering to protest otherwise. He's just saying, the Tories are us.
If it
Tories
helps, he says exactly this, right? So not only does he say, I'm not talking about the Tories, because obviously they're the one, they're our twin brother that we're very familiar with. He says, in Britain, the centre-right has sort of fallen away, as in the Conservatives have crumbled, and now he's looking at the looming spectre of Nigel Farage, who, just to be clear, is not some radical right-winger. Mm. But to the Blairite system, he appears to be a radical right-winger, because he's not for infinite managerialism, which is what his really the underlying opposition to the EU was initially. I mean, Farage, for all his faults, has got the instincts of an Englishman. And so he's just like, well, I don't like this. And it's like, no, you don't, Nigel. Neither do we. Neither do the rest of us. Let's do something about it. And so they're seeing essentially Mr. Brexit coming to tear down the EU-fication of Britain.
But I mean, also his point about the centre-right has fallen away to reform. But of course, as you've already demonstrated...
Well, no, he's not even saying to reform, because he sees reform as right. He is the centre-right.
Ah, think, right. Okay, I missed that.
Well, no, I don't even think he realised this. But think of the way that the Labour Party is operating. Shabana Mahmood becoming, a fascist about the borders and stuff like this, according to the Green Party. Like, they, yes. The Labour Party has just adopted everything in the centre now, right? The centrist consensus is represented in Keir Starmer, and he's like, yeah, this is the real test of centrist politics. I embody it. We have to show that we can win. That is the challenge, he says. It's like, okay, well, you're at 14% now. I'm not sure you're the man for the challenge. And like I said a minute ago, I would love to see the Labour ship go down with this centrist politics attached to it.
Yeah.
That would be incredible.
I mean, his great challenge is getting to 2029.
Yes.
Because there's no constitutional method to get Labour Party out. The only one that I can see is if the bond market revolts to the point where they have to do cuts, the Labour backbenchers can vote down a budget and, you know, effectively that triggers a general election with a few steps in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but so far, Rachel Reeves hasn't really had that much opposition internally to her budgets, even though they're ruining the reputation of the party.
Yeah, I mean, because they're designed to appeal to the minimal extent they need to appeal to the bond market, but then it's 80% appealing to Labour backbenchers.
Like your triangle, you've got the backbenchers, the bond market, and the public. Yeah. Which ones is she satisfying? The backbenchers and the bond market.
It's but like, mainly the backbenchers.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, going back to your 14% of the polls on four seats, you know, you can say the public don't matter for a certain period of time until it matters all at once.
And you have to wonder, at some point, is this going to register with Labour MPs? Because presumably none of these people have useful skills. I mean, none that I've been able to determine.
I mean,
is Rachel Reeves really wanting to... I mean, not just Rachel Reeves. She was a complaints manager at HSBC Bank before she was doing this, and she wasn't very good at it, and she would have been fired if it wasn't one of the higher-ups thinking that she might be a big wig in Labour one day.
If she didn't keep failing upwards.
Yeah. I mean, but and she's one of the best that Labour have. Are these people really going to want to give up 90 grand a year salaries to go back to being cashiers or teachers or whatever the hell they were before to get their 3 to 4 years of basically socialist red meat? Or are they going to want to pivot at some point? Because they seem remarkably obstinate.
I think it's purely ideology. I think it's Blairite managerial ideology, where they are committed to the system, and I think they truly believe in the rules-based order.
Yeah, but what about self-interest? I mean, that's got to kick in at some point.
I genuinely think they're not flexible enough in their own thinking.
Right.
And so you are right. I think we're looking at a zombie parliament, right? This is a dead man walking. This is a condemned parliament, where 400 Labour MPs and another 73 Conservatives are just, I mean, nearly 500 MPs are going to get slaughtered in the next election. I don't think that's ever happened.
We ran the last election on the campaign of zero seats for the Tories, and what we really meant by zero seats, it was not literally zero seats, because you can't get that in our system. It was basically below 50.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
And we're going to get it.
We're now going to get it double barrel.
Yeah,
we're going to get zero seats for the Conservatives and for Labour.
I know. It's so good. It's so good. I try not to smile about it, but it's so good.
I mean, if only reform was a bit more worthy, we could get really excited, but still, there's enough to be happy about.
Yeah, I'm just glad that reform are not Blairites, right? You can say whatever you like about them, and they are, you know, soft on a bunch of issues, but at least Nigel Farage can never be accused of being a Eurocrat.
No. Right?
Whereas Keir Starmer and the Tories absolutely can be accused of that. So for all his faults, he's not that. And he's always been an outrider on that issue, the sort of parochial Englishness, frankly, of the dislike of the continental system. And so, fine. I'm okay with Nigel Farage being our representative here. Not a huge fan, but I'm okay with it. And the results, if we get anything, even half of this, right? Even if only 35 Conservative MPs go and 200 Labour MPs go, that'll be a superb, superb result that will probably put a reform government in place. So anyway, moving on. As you pointed out, the Labour Party, this is from The Times, but it's just summarised from Patrick Maguire here. As you pointed out, the Labour Party are dead men walking, and almost in the entire, in fact, it is the entire Labour front bench, basically, that stand to lose their seats. So all of, I mean, and that's an unusual thing to happen, right? Even if you don't get elected to the next government, Very rarely does the front bench just lose all of their seats.
Yeah.
Just very rarely.
I mean, there's only four remaining, so I mean, which ones stay? I mean...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It'd be...
Does Keir Starmer keep his seat? Is he one of the four?
No.
No? Okay.
No, the entire Labour front bench loses their seats.
The entire Labour front bench go?
Yes. It's 407 of them gone.
Oh, I'm going to enjoy this when it happens.
I know, right? It's going to be so good. And so the Labour Party is currently struggling. It's like, okay, what are we going to do, actually? Because the front that they put up is like, no, we're in control. The system works. The system is everything. The system is infallible.
The rules are being followed.
The rules, exactly. The rules are being followed, right? But everyone can see that they're literally following them off a cliff. And so they're all, again, it's very Soviet, right? It's like, oh, Stalin's like not come out of his office for 3 days. Are you going to go in and check? Hell no, I'm not going to go in and check. It's like, well, someone's going to have to, aren't they? Yeah, but I might be the guy who gets shot. It's like, okay, that's great, but we're going to end up going off the cliff if someone doesn't check if the driver's dead yet, you know? And so this is one of those things where it's like, right, okay, do we have anyone else? And as you can see, according to the Labour membership, well, the best they seem to have is Ed Miliband, followed by Wes Streeting, and then Lucy Powell, Shabana Mahmood, and Rachel Reeves.
But Wallace and Gromit puppet himself.
Just genuinely.
He's coming a bit bellicose like that. I've actually met him in real life once.
Oh, he's incredibly soft.
Oh, unbelievably beta male. In fact, is there a category below beta male? It's...
Do you not remember the, was he with Andrew Neil or something? It's like, are you tough enough to fight Putin? He's like, hell yeah, I'm tough enough. And it's like.
So when I met him, I was leaving a London club that he was trying to get into, but it was a bit exclusive and he was obviously having some difficulty. And he was with two women and the women were trying to argue their way in. And he was just sort of stood to the side looking as meek and pathetic as possible. So I thought, oh, this will be fun. So I marched over and shake his hand. Obviously, he's got the limpest handshake of all time. And I congratulated him on making me so much money with his green subsidies. And honestly, you have never been in the presence of a more emasculated beta male in your life. I mean, he's just the. I mean, most women genuinely have more testosterone than he does.
I mean, I've seen Keir Starmer punching a punch bag, so I know the kind of person you don't.
I think it's below even.
It's
that.
Worse that, isn't it?
I think it's worse.
Well, the point is, Ed Miliband, he's not anyone's first choice, right?
He is people's first. He's Labour backbencher's first choice because...
Well, he wasn't. Starmer was. It's just Starmer has mishandled it so poorly.
No, I think he was. But Labour backbenchers genuinely love this guy.
I was going to get to that. He is a popular man, right?
Yes.
So I'm sure he's very, you know, lovable and likable and nice. You know, you'd like to, you know, going for a dinner with him, I'm sure he's... You know, very nice company. You know, he's scoffing his bacon sandwich. I'm sure he's a lovely chap.
He is actually supposed to be Jewish, by the way, which is what made that bacon sandwich farce.
And people say integration doesn't happen. Like, honestly, I'm not saying they're right on that. Anyway, the point being, I'm sure he's a lovely guy, but he's also too familiar, as in he's just a part of the system. Everyone knows he's a part of the system. He came up during the Blair years. Like this is where he made his bones, and he's like over time. Right, there's an ecological phenomenon where you get a 100 million years ago a volcano erupts, and then over the century of millennia, the weak rock around sloughs away, so you get this pillar of basalt, right? And you get these a lot in South America, right? Mm. They look weird because it's just this shelf of rock that comes out. So where did that come from? Well, that's kind of what's left in the Labour Party now, right? You've got anyone with any competence has fallen away from the Labour Party. And so this is the best that they have. This is their front bench. Ed Miliband, Wes Streeting, Lucy Powell, Shabana Mahmood, and Rachel Reeves. If you were playing like a strategy game and you had to choose one of these as a general.
Oh, it would be Shabana.
It would. But you'd be like, okay, this is not a good selection.
No,
like this is not ideal.
But Shabana is the only one who's vaguely competent in that entire list. But,
correct.
But again, the Labour Party aren't so stupid as to make the Tories' mistake as putting an immigrant in as head of their party.
Correct. It looks like it's down to Ed Miliband and Wes Streeting. Obviously, neither one are particularly brilliant. Although apparently, according to the Guardian, Angela Rayner is making moves behind the scenes.
She's the only one with any personality.
Yeah, Big Ange, she does have some personality.
I mean, actually, of the ones we talked about, if I was a Labour backbencher, Ange is the one that I'd want to follow into the next election. Because she could actually hold her own in debates and stuff. I mean, she wouldn't know anything, but she's got that sort of bubbly working class.
It's not that she's not likable.
Gobbiness.
I'll concede that.
Yeah.
However, do you see her as being the Prime Minister of the country?
Oh,
what
no,
happens
I mean,
if
that,
Vladimir
that,
Putin
that,
declares
that
war?
That would be a farce. But if I was a Labour backbencher, I'd be gunning for official opposition. And I would conclude that Ange is the only one who can get me there. Because people would say, well, she's not going to be Prime Minister, but, you know, she's a funny, gobby northerner woman. So
maybe we can win the working class back with her, something like that. But apparently she's been on manoeuvres behind the scenes.
Good luck to her.
Yeah, Wes Streeting has defied expectations, and he's kind of set himself up in an unofficial leadership bid, because part of this Stalin-esque sort of cabinet of Labour ministers, is they all can see the writing on the wall, but they know that if they start breaking ranks, then the entire government falls apart, and the pressure goes on to call a general election.
And also, he's a white male, which Labour only ever elect white males.
That is true, but he is a eunuch. No, I'm joking. Mm. I don't know if he's an actual eunuch. He just looks like one. Just plays one on TV. So the point is, the Labour Party are currently in some sort of devil's pact, where they know that there's a problem. They know that they should be having some kind of internal leadership election, but they also know that all the sharks are surrounding them. And if they start drawing blood on one another, then their party gets torn apart. They're
Is it the May, the big lot of local elections?
It is, yeah.
They're
going to get
as
smacked.
You've already shown earlier on, there's enough by-elections and council elections that they should be doing it now if they had any sense.
Yes.
But there's no way they get past May with Keir Starmer in post, and then this blood is going to have to be in the water.
But then the entire the way that the Westminster structure works, as you said, there's no formal mechanism for removing a government, but there is a pressure mechanism that the Conservatives are particularly weak to, which is why they've had so many prime ministers in so many years, where the party itself will trigger the leadership election or a general election repeatedly. Mm. To try and gain a foothold that they can say, no, I'm legitimate on. And like you say, if it genuinely could well be that although there's no formal mechanism, the public pressure just gets too much. That even the people in the Labour Party, like Keir, we've just lost however many hundreds of seats at these local elections in May. We're on, could go down to like 10% in the polls. Like, you just have to go, right? This is all of our lives. This is the entire Labour Party you're putting in peril. And so a leadership election or a general election may be triggered. So it could well be that we're looking at Rayner, Miliband, Streeting, and of course Shabana Mahmood, who her allies think she's much more close to the center of political gravity in the UK, which is true.
Well, she's the only one who's vaguely competent, but she's an immigrant.
And prepared to do right-wing things.
Yeah. You know? So Labour aren't gonna select her. And I would like to think, because it would just be so funny, but it's probably going to be Ed Miliband. I don't put much stock on West Streeting.
I kind of hope it's Ed Miliband, because he's kind of like the Liberal Democrat in the party, which serves no one. Right, the Liberal Democrats already have their Ed Davey. They love their Ed Davey, and you notice that Miliband's campaigning is very similar to Ed Davey's. It's quite frivolous. It's quite jolly. It's quite I'm fun at parties kind of guy. Right, so he doesn't.
I mean, Ed Miliband doesn't have a big garden, so he's not a Lib Dem, but he does have two kitchens.
He does, because he lives in a London townhouse, I imagine.
Yes, an £8 million London townhouse with two kitchens.
Again, small garden, but it's very tall. Yes. Anyway, I would like it to be Ed Miliband just to finally seal off the Labour Party, because Ed Miliband will never bring back their old coalitions. Angela Rayner might win back some working class. You know, Shabana Mahmood might bring back some immigrants. Right?
Yeah, fair
like, it, but Ed Miliband is bringing back nobody.
Well, and he's already had a run at leader.
Yes, and he failed.
Yes.
So, good for them. Anyway, so just on the other side, quickly, Nigel Farage is, of course, deeply mired in some scandal that he was a racist teenager. It has affected his polling in no way whatsoever. It has not in any way... Yeah. bothered his core supporters.
It bothered him more than it bothered his supporters.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He was the one who took more offence at this than anyone else.
It was such a ham-fisted series of weird denials.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to advise Conservative MPs, maybe Nigel Farage get Nick Fuentes over to give them coaching on what you say when somebody accuses you of racism.
Exactly. Just literally stop taking it seriously, Nigel. But yeah. The point being, this has been, and I'm just using this in article as an example, but as you'll be aware, there's been a massive, massive attempt. There's been something like 30 people have accused him of racism when he was a teenager at Dulwich College. This has been enormous. And it feels genuinely like the last sally from the old guard. It's like, right, we're all going to get together, lads. 50 years ago, Nigel Farage was racist to me. And it's like,
yeah,
okay, so what? You know, like, yeah. Who cares? And really, you're in your 60s and you're crying about Nigel Farage being mean to you at school.
It reminds me of that thing where Trump or a Supreme Court justice was getting put up for nomination and all of a sudden, you know, all these 80-year-old rapists, rape victims would come out of the cupboard.
Yeah, when Brett Kavanaugh, yeah.
Yeah.
40 years ago, he raped me in a college dorm. It's like, and he happens to have his exact schedule. Yes. It's like, what kind of autist are you? I was there on that day. So,
I mean, if you ever see a 14-year-old keeping a meticulous diary, just think, yeah, possible Supreme Court justice right there.
Right, exactly. So anyway, none of this has had any effect on people's support of reform.
Mm.
It's really vain to think that it would, right?
Mm.
Because the average reform voter is probably really voting against immigration. They're voting against foreigners. That's what they're doing.
Well, I think that the electorate have been doing that for 20 years.
Yeah, but this is a more consolidated.
Yeah,
like no, we're the English now, and we're picking reform. They don't say it in their own heads, but this is the feeling that leads them to it. And so, calling them racist, calling Nigel Farage racist, is just calling his voters racist, and they've been called racist their whole lives. And I think,
well, and also they might think, well, maybe we need a bit of that these days because we've had the liberal boomer. Post-war philosophy, and it is ruining us. So they're basically endorsing him.
Yeah. So will they deter voters? Well, they haven't so far, and I've got no reason to think they will.
Hmm.
Just a quick thing on the your party. It polled at 1% the other day. Zara Sultana has sufficiently torpedoed it. The independent Gaza MPs who are making up are leaving because the left are finding out in real time that actually Muslims are really socially conservative.
Yeah. For themselves,
but that's one of their strengths, you know. Yeah. It's like, you know, I'm not a big fan of Islam, but I can respect that. And the left are finding out, what, you're not for trans rights? And Iqbal Muhammad's like, no. Why did you think I was?
Imagine operating in a world philosophy where you assumed Muslims would be for trans rights.
And that's why the Green Party will eventually have this problem of their own. Right.
Yes.
Eventually, the Green Party is currently eating up the student politics vote and the immigrant vote, and the Green Party will come to this same juncture at some point. Zach Polanski has been very firm. No, we're a pro-trans rights party. Well, what happens when
Moffat Ali stood behind him is frowning at him?
And what happens when you're 3/4 Muslim?
Right? Yeah.
Does the rest of your party agree? Is it a democratic party? Do you get voted out by an anti-trans? Person, and then the Green Party just becomes literally the Islamic Party.
I think the Islamists in the Green Party can tolerate it because they know it's not their kids getting trans. Quite frankly, they couldn't give a hoot if the white kids get trans.
And they know who is the increasing constituency in the party and who isn't.
Mm.
Right? Yes, no, we're going to continue to grow until we're 3/4 of the party, and then who cares what you say? Because we've got the demographic power here. And then finally, I thought we'd come to Rupert Lowe. Because he recently launched his Great Yarmouth First Party.
Ooh, how did that do?
How did that happen?
Now, how did that do?
Well, it's currently at 44% in Great Yarmouth.
Right, up 44%. I mean, that is the strongest result we've seen so far.
Of any party.
It's kind of remarkable. If you offer people a genuinely right-wing party rather than a sort of milquetoast right-wing party, which Reform is, 44%. Flock to it on day one.
Yes, we're going to put the native constituents of this constituency first. Then half of them are like, oh, finally, thank God.
Yes.
So as you
bang 44%.
And this literally just out of the gate, launches it. And on day one, he's already polling nearly half the electorate in Great Yarmouth.
I mean, in our system,
that's amazing.
If that was replicated at the national level, I mean, it would. I mean, you'd be past supermajority level.
Oh god, yeah. You'd be on 450 seats. It'd be incredible.
Yeah.
So, anyway, as you can see, he's just chewed up the Labour, Reform, and Conservative vote. So, Reform, on which Rupert Lowe got elected in Great Yarmouth, is not unassailable.
No.
It is not insurmountable.
It's interesting they still held up 16%. They lost basically half their vote, and he got...
So did everyone else.
Yeah. But he basically got, yeah, half of everybody.
Yeah.
Apart from the Lib Dems. But, I mean, they're in their own bubble. I mean, they, yeah. Like I say, they've got no neuroplasticity left.
I mean,
but,
good to know that 5% of Great Yarmouth are people with large gardens.
Yes.
Right, that's just what that represents.
But fascinating, Labour, Reform and Conservatives all halved in favour of Rupert Lowe.
Yeah.
That is a broad appeal.
That is a broad appeal, right? And that shows that that's genuinely outside of the consensus. No. We're just going to put us first. Don't care about don't care about your coalitions. Don't care about your ideology. It's going to be Great Yarmouth first, and half people say,
"What a novel political formula! We're going to put the people of Britain first. Instant electoral success."
And not only that, because Rupert Lowe is their MP who's doing this.
Yeah.
He's already got the bully pulpit, but he also has a very good track record of being a man of his word.
Mm.
Rupert Lowe is by far the most radical right-wing nativist MP in the entire country.
Well, he's the only radical nativist
MP. By a long, long way, right? By a long way. And so it's not like the people of Great Yarmouth are like, well, I'm not sure. Oh, no, you can be absolutely sure that Rupert Lowe is going to be the right-wing outrider on all this. And almost half of them are like, yeah, I love it. You know, that's what I want. I want Great Yarmouth put first.
It feels like there's some sort of lesson in this.
It genuinely does, doesn't it? Because, I mean, like, Rupert Lowe every month donates his salary to a local charity.
Yeah.
Like, that is just such a good example of how an MP can really show, no, I'm for this constituency. I'm for us here. And that's going to be it. And so if I launch the Great Yarmouth First Party, absolute, just smashing the opponents.
I mean, there is a good argument that we should go back to how Parliament used to be, which was zero salary.
Yeah.
And the argument against that in the 90s was you don't want to go back to that because it would mean only landed aristocracy and unions would ever put up candidates.
Yep.
And now I'm thinking, yeah, that is a good reason.
Mm.
That is exactly what we should have.
People who have a direct investment in where they live.
Yes.
Are the ones who actually...
But I mean, and it doesn't necessarily limit it to that. It could be anybody who could say, who can do a fundraiser and say, look, I'm going to launch a Patreon to become an MP.
Mm.
If enough people follow me, I'll stand as an MP and you can pay my salary and crowdsourcing it.
Now, isn't that a much better thing than having them paid by central government?
And terrified of losing their job.
Exactly, because now you can't just drop in MPs into random constituencies because that constituency always votes red or blue. Suddenly, you actually have to have some sort of tie to the place and some kind of independence so you can actually serve those people rather than be a creature of the system.
Mm.
And people love it as well. They were interviewing people. The BBC was interviewing people about this. And I'm just going to get to about here. Because they were interviewing them and they're like, yeah, Great Yarmouth needs help. It needs to be thought of. Oh, we can't hear it for some reason. But this lady here had already joined the Great Yarmouth First Party. And she was like, yeah, no, I think that's a brilliant idea. I love it. I think it's a great idea. And I think this actually is indicative of where the future of British politics might go.
Mm-hmm.
So the independent Gaza MPs were basically already doing this.
Mm.
And that's what, you know, what your party is supposed to have been, is an alliance between the independent MPs. But okay, Great Yarmouth First, clearly a winner from the gate. Well, what about any other constituency first?
Mm.
What about, you know, Swindon first? What about Bristol first? What about Leeds first?
It almost sounds like you're describing what Parliament was set up to do in the first place.
Yes. And the events of the 20th century assumed a level of stability and homogeneity that wasn't present prior to the, 20th century and isn't present now.
I mean, I hardly dare dream, but if in 20 years the standard is independent MPs who represent their area first, good God, that would be remarkable.
Wouldn't it? And then you could get very flexible coalitions. If literally every constituency or every region was like, you know, local party first, okay, we're here to look out for the interests of the region. And so we negotiate with other, you know, if Swindon First end up negotiating with Great Yarmouth First, great, I don't doubt we could find a coalition there. You know, we might not get a coalition with Luton First, but then they'll be part of the Green Party. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the Islamic Gaza MPs from Luton. Yeah, okay, we might be in opposition to them, but that's fine because there are going to be way more of the English parties first than there will be the Gaza parties first. And so we will be able to actually control our country as we want. So anyway, all I'm saying is this might represent a proper realignment in British politics, the death of the old style of party and the emergence of something new. It's very early days yet, but again, like you said, don't dare to hope, right? But actually, things in Britain, in particularly in England, move glacially, slowly, but already the shoots of spring are starting to emerge.
If you would like to watch the full uncut version that is also uncensored, head on over to lotuseaters.com to find out more.